you know, sometimes we have a theme for this show. We invite, you know, two different guests, maybe an executive and an author, to give their perspective on some common issue. But today we're not going to be constrained by that. We've got, in fact, two very different authors looking at two very different topics, both of which I find very interesting. So our first guest is Jonathan Gosling. He's been focusing his efforts on understanding how international companies are entering and how they're changing the Chinese market. Jonathan is Emeritus Professor of Leadership Studies at the University of Exeter in the UK, and he's co-author of Sustainable Champions, How International Companies Are Changing the Face of Business in China. But sometimes these being more sustainable leads to real challenges in terms of increasing the cost, decreasing the performance of the product or service that you're delivering. You know, we've just seen something very real about that with the VW scandal, where VW, to make its diesel cars meet U.S. and European regulations, they programmed it in so that they act differently during the test process than they do on the road. You know, what's an example of a company that has, paid the price for acting sustainably in China and seeing a benefit from it?
Well, I think Tetra Pak is perhaps the leading example in here. They've invested billions in very, very large scale production of aseptic packaging, particularly in milk. Because of the very low margins in that kind of business, they had put their major packaging investments in countries, in provinces, parts of China, where there were certain tax and investment opportunities which came with strings attached around sustainability. So Tetra Pak, for example, in their Ho Hut plant, were constrained to use only renewably produced electricity, generated electricity, and there was almost none of that provision available when they started, and they were constrained to use properly certified forest products for their pulp paper. And again, there simply was not enough certified forests in China for them to do that. So they had to basically build and construct these two core supply industries before they could even get going in their own production. And this was really a constraint. And then the milk scandals absolutely battered their business plans. However, they were able to be aware of what was happening with the quality of the milk before even the milk brand companies themselves were. And they were able to trace back the origins of the problems, and through their relationships with pasture managers, were able to put in plans for long-term improvement to help grow those plans. So the capability that Tetra Pak has, which was developed largely through its fine attention to detail, sustainability-driven, enabled them to offer real value to their partners, that is the Chinese milk brands, who were processing their product through their plants.
That's fascinating, Jonathan. So what you're saying, in essence, is that they got hit by these scandals. Their business went down. But the additional discipline and capability that they developed in not just developing a package that was good for packaging milk and good at keeping it free from contaminants was also sustainable. That additional discipline helped them a great deal when the scandal finally hit?
That's right. And further than that, they began to develop a brand identity in China for the kind of quality and reliability around sustainability and safety. Tetra Pak became obliged, and another twist to the story, to safeguard its brand by not having Tetra Pak cartons littering the streets, but rather developing a recycling industry to do this recycling at sufficiently low cost to make it worthwhile in China. So out of that pressure came whole new technologies and new ways of doing this recycling and new products developed from that recycled product. For example, a lot of the outdoor furniture that was built into the various stadia for the Beijing Olympics was made out of recycled Tetra Pak carton.